Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.
Well, my next guest this morning has undeniably one of the toughest jobs in the country and is talked about as a potential future Taoiseach. Almost every day he appears in almost every newspaper. But despite that, what do we really know about Leo Varadkar, the Minister for Health? Well, today, on the morning of his 36th birthday, we're going to put his public role to one side and find out a little bit more about the man himself. Leo Varadkar, happy birthday.
Good morning. Thanks. Thanks very much. And the big 36 today.
Will you celebrate?
Probably. Not doing anything special. Probably just calling to my sisters tonight and so on. I'm off alcohol for January as part of the Irish Heart Foundation's on the dry run campaign. I'll be well behaved.
Health. Look, it's never an easy portfolio. But how are you finding it?
It's tough. It's first of all, it's really interesting having a background as a doctor. It's been interesting to kind of learn all about medicine and healthcare again, having been away from it for a period of time. It's very busy. There's some sort of big issue come crisis almost every other week. But it's something I'm really enjoying getting stuck into. I'm only kind of regret a little bit that it's happening at the end of the term of government. It's the kind of thing you'd sort of like to have, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years at, because you know, changes that you make now don't necessarily show for a year or two.
You got into a lot of hot water, of course, at the beginning of this month for your holiday in Florida. And one of the things you said, because of the crisis that broke here, that when you returned, was that even when you were on holiday, you were in daily contact with Tony O'Brien from the HS. I mean, do you ever really regret taking on the department Brian Cowan referred to as Angola?
Yeah, I was away for a full 3 days. managed to get that. But obviously the trolley number spiked, I think, the second day I was away. And then I came back the day after. And with modern technology, you know, you're always in touch no matter what. I don't regret it at all. I did love transport, tourism and sport. I really, really particularly liked the sport part of the brief and really got interest in aviation. And I still find myself reading all the aviation journals and so on. But I think in any job in politics, actually after about 3 or 4 years, you start to become a little bit stale, a little bit institutionalised. You start to know the players maybe too well. And it's actually a good thing, I think, to rotate and move on a bit and get stuck into something new.
Well, as I said at the outset, we hear interviews with you all the time. I do them myself about policies and crisis, but it's going to be not one of those interviews this morning. Take me right back, will you, Leo? Tell me about your parents.
Yeah, my mum and dad. My mum's... she's from Waterford, from Dungarvan in West Waterford, farmer's daughter. She's a nurse, left home when she was very young. I think she was 18 and went off to train as a nurse in England. And my dad's from India originally, from Mumbai, or from just south of Mumbai. And I think he's probably one of the first in his family to go to university, to go to college. And he went to England in the 70s, emigrated there. He always tells us he arrived with 50 pounds in his pocket and a shirt in his back and nothing else. But he did also have a qualification in medicine, which does help. They met, I think it was in Slough or Leicester. I think it was Slough. So, you know, he's a doctor, she's a nurse. The rest is obvious. And they lived in England for a while. My big sister, Sophie, was born over in England. And then they went to India for a while. And depending on... he was a consultant paediatrician over there, and depending, I suppose, on whose side of the story you believe, it didn't work out for one reason or another. And my grandmother got my dad a job in Drogheda, so he went to work there for a while, and then in Harcourt Street for quite some time. That was 73, I think, and then I was born in 79.
And he became a GP, I think, in the end, didn't he? What was your childhood home like? Because I think his practice was there. Was it very much like in the old days when the sitting room, the living room would nearly be where the patients would wait?
Yeah, it was the old-fashioned practice, if you like, on Brompton Green, then moved to Roseon Road afterwards. So the surgery was our garage, which was converted into a surgery. And initially, at least for the first couple of years, the patients came to the front door, and our sitting room was actually the waiting room. So it was very much living over the shop. My mum, being nurse, was, you know, practice nurse, practice manager, relationship manager, pretty much everything other than seeing the patients, she did. And I really kind of helped me actually get elected at all. I think the fact that my parents were so well known and so respected in the community, having a funny surname isn't usually an advantage in Irish politics, but it was for me for that reason. But one thing I never got to do, which I still hope to do, is learn how to play a musical instrument, because I was never allowed to practice at home because my mother was always afraid it would disturb the patients, you know, who were in our sitting room. So, but they're now retired. My dad actually worked up until about 70. Okay. And then just my other sister had twins. My mum decided that they were more important than the surgery, so they retired at that point.
Interesting, before the last election, there was a great TV doc actually made, and they followed a number of people, including yourself, around. And at one stage, you revealed that when you were only 7 or 8, if this is believable, you had your heart set on being Minister for Health. Why in God's name?
Yeah, I don't. It's true. Yeah, I remember. I think it was in my mum in the shops. I think it was in a lady's boutique or something, and I was asked what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I think you're supposed to say, you know, an ambulance or a footballer or a soldier or something like that. And I told all my mother's friends that I wanted to be Minister for Health. And she was mortified, needless to say. I don't know why I thought that. Probably because even when I was very young, and I don't really know why. So I was probably only 7 or 8 at the time. I had an interest in politics and kind of a passion for politics. Was really into seeing the election posters go up. And
where did that come from?
I don't know. Like, neither of my parents are involved in politics or, you know, anything like that. But my dad is political, certainly, and we would have always talked about, you know, politics and religion and money and all those things that you're not supposed to talk about at the dinner table. We did. And there's a line, I think it comes from George Bernard Shaw or something, but I think it was Robert Kennedy probably said it best. And it was, you know, some people see things as they are and ask why. Other people dream of things as they might be and ask why not. And I suppose that was just where I was coming from. Even when I was working in the health service as a doctor, I sort of saw the way things were organised and set up, and I thought to myself, it doesn't have to be this way. Or even sort of living in West Dublin in a very rapidly developing area. When we lived in Roseon in the Blanchetown-Castleknock area, it was probably the last estate in the city, and then all of a sudden everything mushroomed up around us, and it wasn't very well planned. And you know, I didn't like the way the area was being planned, and that kind of prompted me to run for the council. So I guess it's just that feeling that I think a lot of people have who are involved in politics, that rather than complain about the way things are, maybe just try and change them. At least, even if you fail, at least you tried and you're less bitter about it all.
Did the fact that your dad was originally from India and that you, I suppose, have a mixed ethnicity, did that attract any unwanted attention when you were at school? Were you conscious of it?
Not enormously. Like the fact that my dad was the local GP, you know, really helped in that sense. But people would and still do say kind of funny things to you, which I don't think they mean any harm, but you know, things like you know, where are you from originally, or do you ever go back to India, and that kind of stuff. Like I was born in the Rotunda, you know. I'm a proper Northsider, you know. I don't go back to India, you know. But there'd be that kind of stuff, and then I suppose with the advent of social media, there'd be a bit of stuff on Twitter and on blogs and that type of stuff. But I actually don't really let it bother me.
But since your dad is from India, you know, do you identify with India at all? Is that at all part of who you are, your identity, do you think?
Yeah, it is. I think on two levels. You know, first of all, because I always knew that there was a bigger world out there, you know, that the world didn't stop at Ireland or Dublin, and that I had family in India, and that, you know, there were different places in the world. That was a big place, and there were different religions and different races and all of that. And I went there first when I was 14 on a family holiday, and not being used to seeing poverty, you know, not the kind of poverty we have in Ireland, you know, very different type of poverty. I really didn't like the place at all. But then I kind of went there again when I was a medical student. I spent about 2 months there working in one of the public hospitals, trying to get experience, and got a lot of experience there. And it takes, if you're not used to developing countries, it takes about a week or two to stop seeing the bad things and start seeing the good things. And when you do see the good things, it is a fabulous place. There's nowhere like it. And so it is. Yeah, it's part of my background and part of my identity, but not something that governs it.
What was your time?
Ireland is very much home.
What was your time like at school? Did you enjoy school?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I was in King's Hospital, which is a Church of Ireland fee-paying school in Palmerstown. Very good school. Probably kind of an all-around school, not exceptionally academic or sporty or musical, but there was a bit of everything, a bit of debating, things like that. Probably a bit of a swat in school, to be honest. I was very academically focused and, didn't do other things that I should have been doing. Didn't really get involved in sport until really my 20s and so on. But it's a great school, and I'm still in touch with a lot of people who went there. Catherine Thomas actually was in my year. We were in the same class. So
great. You went to Trinity and became a doctor. Was it a difficult decision to leave behind medicine?
Not enormously, because I didn't just this is when I went into politics.
Yeah.
Not especially, because I did kind of phase my way out. I was working as a junior doctor and as a counsellor at the same time, and they actually were the craziest years. That was really hard to do. And then I was trained to be a GP when I was on the council, and then got elected to the Dáil. So I kind of was working full time and then 2 days a week, and then sort of phased my way out to about one session a month until I became a minister. And so it was never a sudden break. I do miss it the odd time now, because the odd time now, if I remember, we were playing a rugby match about two years ago. It was us playing the House of Commons. The Dáil was playing the House of Commons, and we won, by the way. And it was really mucky day, and there were a couple of injuries, and I had to take the second half off to, you know, play doctor. And I sort of still enjoy the kind of dealing with, you know, trauma or accidents, and still do a little bit of that. So I do miss it, but then at the same time, there's no more interesting job than politics, because every day is totally different. I've never woken up once in the morning not wanting to go to work, and sometimes medicine can be a bit monotonous, because, you know, you are seeing the same stuff every day, particularly if you specialise.
You're 36 today. You are, by all accounts, very eligible, but you haven't settled down yet, have you?
No, not at all. I suppose like I've always kind of put the career and the job and politics and all of that first. I have a good social life, but I probably didn't give much time to my personal life, at least until the last couple of years. Now that all my friends are getting married and having kids, and I'd say every kind of month now I'm at a wedding or a christening or something like that. And I suppose it's only now in the last maybe 2 years that I've really given time to personal life, or given thought to the fact that I always kind of thought that I'd be alone. For whatever reason, I was kind of happy with that. And it's only in the last year or two that I've sort of rethought that and made time for relationships and other people.
And what kind of a relationship would you be looking for?
Well, you know, I'm a very private person, and I still am, and I keep my private life to myself, and that's going to continue. And I always think that that friends and family are off bounds. I went into politics; they didn't. I am a gay man. It's not a secret, but not something that everyone would necessarily know, but isn't something I've spoken publicly about before.
I mean, maybe within your own close friends, and I suppose some people in the media, but I don't think most people would know that you are a gay man.
I think a lot of people do. A lot of people wonder, and then a lot of people don't. It's not something that defines me. I'm not a half Indian politician, or a doctor politician, or a gay politician for that matter. It's just part of who I am. It doesn't define me, but it is part of my character, I suppose.
As you say, you're quite a private person, though. So why have you decided to talk about it? Why do you feel it's important to say publicly that you are a gay man?
Well, in part personal reasons, because I'm sort of comfortable to talk about it now, and that's that's fine. Wasn't always, and but I have been for the last couple of years, and so it's not a big deal for me anymore. I hope it's not a big deal for anyone else. It shouldn't be. But then also there are, you know, political and policy reasons too. I am now the Minister for Health. There are decisions coming up that are not entirely my own, but I will be involved in them. We've legislation coming forward this year about surrogacy, for example, and also a decision has to be made on whether we lift or relax the ban on gay and bisexual men donating blood. And there's a report on my desk, well, I read it a week or two ago, on that issue. And I suppose what I want people to know, and I've always tried to be honest with people, and I've always been a straight talker, and I trust people to the extent that I feel that I can be honest with them. And I just want people to know that whatever decisions are made on any issue, I'll make them according to what I believe is in the public interest and my own conscience. I won't be allowing my own background or my own sexual orientation to dictate the decisions that I make.
The downside, I suppose, of being a public person is that you feel you need to talk about your sexual orientation, which is obviously very private. Why do you feel you need to talk about it?
Well, I suppose for that reason, because of the issues that are coming up. Obviously, there's a referendum on marriage equality coming up too. And I just kind of want to be honest with people. I don't want anyone to think that I have a hidden agenda or that I'm not being fully honest with them. And I was kind of, I don't want to dwell too much on the referendums. I know this isn't a political programme, but that's coming up obviously in May. And I was thinking about the arguments that I might make. And that's what politicians do. You know, you rehearse your arguments, you write them down, you run them by a few people. And all the arguments that I was going to make were kind of detached. I was going to say, you know, that it was important for the LGBT community that, you know, gay couples should have their, you know, relationships recognised equally, and all those kind of arguments. And that wouldn't be entirely honest, because what I really want to say is that I'd like it to, like the referendum to pass, because I'd like to be an equal citizen in my own country, the country in which I happen to be a member of government, and at the moment I'm not. And actually, for me, it's not about getting married, because I have no plans to do so whatsoever. It is about that, and I'm not going to be leading the campaign or anything like that. That's, I think, for other people to do. But I want, any time I am asked, to be able to answer a question and answer it honestly.
And we're not going to go into that substantive debate, but just to put the other side for anyone listening who would respect your courage in speaking out today, but would not be for a yes vote in the same-sex referendum. They would feel it would undermine the family, undermine marriage. What would you say to them?
Well, look, I totally respect their views. And a lot of people I know hold that view. And I think it's important that that we respect where they're coming from. And allow validity towards those opinions. But in my view, whenever the campaign does happen, I don't think it should really be run by politicians anyway. I think it should be, you know, a conversation that people have around the dinner table with their families and friends. Whether people realise it or not, there's probably an LGBT person in every family and in every group of friends. And maybe this is the opportunity for us to have that conversation.
Did you tell your parents, the people close to you, that you were going to do this interview?
Yeah, I did. They know of me for months or years at this stage, but I obviously gave them a heads up. I wouldn't have them being asked at mass in a few hours' time or anything like that. So, without getting a heads up.
Did they react? Did they say go for it, or did they have any reservations about you coming out publicly gay?
Well, with my sisters and my friends, not at all. Nothing there. My parents are a bit different. I know when you when you watch these Hollywood movies and you see somebody comes out, they all start crying and they kind of hug it out, and that's not really the way my family works. I don't think any Irish families work like that. But I think for my mum was just more an issue of concern. She had some gay friends when she was a nurse in England, and they had a hard time, and she was kind of concerned that I'd get beaten up on the street, or concerned about losing my seat and that type of thing, or people using it against me in politics. But that's a good start, you know, because it was concern for me and nothing else. And that was the first conversation. And the second conversation, she'd talked to my sisters and had kind of come around and said that the only thing she wanted for me was to be happy. And she was fine about it. And my dad did something similar. You know, he comes from an Indian background. India's a very, very conservative society still. And family and the traditional family is everything. So, again, a little bit difficult for him initially, but didn't take long. So so it's been a good experience in that sense for me. I know that's not the case for everyone. I do know people who have been rejected by their families and treated badly in their workplace and things like that. So I guess I'm lucky that it's been okay for me, and I'm fortunate as well to be in a country where we can have this conversation in studio. That wouldn't be the case in Russia, for example, or in other countries.
When did you know you were gay?
Looking back now, I always knew, but I didn't know in my own mind really for until maybe a year or two ago. I'm not sure why that is or was, but that's just that's just the way it is.
Was it in a way that you didn't want to accept that you were gay? I mean, that sounds like I'm being critical, but I'm not. But was there a part of you that didn't want to face up to the fact that you were gay?
I guess so. Yeah, I think that's probably the truth.
And what changed you? What gave you the courage to change?
I suppose it was just the fact that I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was kind of largely, I suppose, you get just a certain place in your life where you start to care a little bit less about what other people think. You know, people talk about, you know, the best days of their life being in college or when you're in your early 20s. Like, actually, certainly for me and for a lot of people, you can be very insecure at that age, and you're much too concerned about what other people think. And in reality, they're thinking very little about you, but you think they are. And then the second thing was just the fact that, all my friends are either getting married or having kids and are settling down, and I'm starting to wonder, you know, what does the future hold for me? Do I really want to be alone? That just kind of had me, I suppose, open up to the idea that life could be different.
And when you said it originally, maybe to your parents or the people closest to you, maybe your sisters or your parents, who did you tell first?
Who did I tell first? Friends first, and then my sisters, and then my folks.
Were they surprised, or did they say?
It was a mix, actually. You can be surprised at the ones who knew already, and then you're surprised at the ones who didn't cop on already. For some, it was just, just kind of figured, and wait for you to tell us. And then for others, it was a big surprise. But certainly nothing negative, nothing unsupportive. So I've been very, very lucky like that.
Was your mum surprised?
Not really. She said she kind of suspected already, and no.
When you were at college, though, like, it's well known that you're very friendly with Lucinda Creighton. Like, would she have known?
We haven't had that conversation explicitly, but I think so. Yeah.
Did she know you were going to do this today?
No.
No. Interestingly, recently talking about the same sex referendum, she was saying that she'd softened her view, and that it was partly because there were friends of hers who she knew and she was very fond of who were gay. Would you have been one of the people at this stage she might have been referring to?
I'm not sure, really. I guess you'd have to ask her that. We did meet up over Christmas. We always do. We don't talk much about politics anymore. We just meet up as old friends, and we do from time to time. And we've had a discussion about marriage equality, and so I don't know if that had any influence on her thinking at all, but I know she has other friends, obviously, who are gay. But I think a lot of people sometimes see Lucinda as you know, a very strong woman, a kind of a Margaret Thatcher figure or an Eva Perón or something like that. Actually, behind that, there's a very warm heart and a very kind person. And whatever her views may be on social issues, she is a very, very compassionate person, and people should know that.
Have you had a conversation with the Taoiseach about you being gay?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, rang him just in the last couple of days, and then just to tell him that I would that I'd be here. Thought he deserved a heads up, but it was fine. I kind of barely had to tell him. I was.
What did he say?
He said it was my private life and it's a private issue, and it was none of his concern, that he wouldn't be commenting on it, that nothing would be different and nothing would change. He asked me if I'd ever been to the Panty Bar, which is the bar he visited in the last couple of weeks, and I said, actually, no, I haven't. So he said, there you go, Varadkar, I'm ahead of you already.
When did you tell him?
Just this weekend.
Do you think he would have known beforehand you were gay?
Oh, yeah, he didn't. He did know, because just from the conversation, I didn't even need to say it. I just kind of started off sort of awkwardly and a little bit embarrassed. You know, there's a personal matter I need to talk to you about, and
so
on.
Did you call him or go and see
him? No, I rang him.
You rang him. That must be an awkward conversation to get started.
Yeah, it's just a little bit embarrassing. And I imagine people have to have that conversation in their workplace all the time. But he really was absolutely fine about it. And I knew he would be, because, you know, obviously there are other members of the Dáil too. So I'm by no means the first. And he was really, really sound about it, actually.
The rest of the party, your colleagues, even the cabinet, do you think they're aware of your sexuality, your sexual orientation?
I don't know.
And when you meet them all tomorrow?
Won't be tomorrow, no, it'll be Tuesday, yeah.
Tuesday, right.
Actually, well, it'll be cabinet subcommittees tomorrow, so I'll meet some of them tomorrow. A lot of people do know, some people don't. Like I say, I am a private person. It's not something that I go around talking about, and I'm still going to stay a very private person. But people, obviously everyone knows now, so we'll see how it goes.
Do you worry that, you said earlier you've never been defined by ethnicity, the fact that your father is Indian.
Hmm.
Do you worry that, you know, coming out and saying you're gay, that people might look at you differently? I know that sounds odd, but they define you as a gay minister or even a gay Taoiseach.
Well, I suppose the only worry that I do have is that people will treat me differently. Like, I know it's going to be fine with family and friends. But my only kind of worry, is that people will see me differently or treat me differently in some way. That's just something I'm going to have to figure out over the next little while. I hope they don't, because, you know, I am the same person. I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning and go to work and do everything that I'd planned to do. And like I say, to me, it's not a big deal. I just hope it's not a big deal for anyone else.
Did you think long and hard about just telling people publicly, the people who don't know, that you are gay? Is it something you've thought about for a long time?
Yeah, something I kind of decided to do in the last 6 months. And it was just a case of trying to find the right time. And it's hard to find the right time in politics, because, you know, people always ascribe motivations to anything you do. So I didn't want to do it at such a time where, for example, saying the run-up to the reshuffle, people might have thought it was something to do with that, that I was, you know, manoeuvring or pitching or something. And then in the last couple of months, I was trying to find a time where there wasn't something, a major issue going on in health. And I was afraid that people would say that I was just trying to take attention away from that. And they will say that. And that's just the reality of politics. But in health, there really is never a time that there isn't something happening.
But Ireland has changed a lot in recent decades. But I mean, it was when you were a teenager that homosexuality was actually decriminalised. I mean, it's not that long ago. It has changed a lot as a society.
Yeah, it's changed changed enormously, I think, as a country in the last 10 or 20 years. And again, that's where I'm pretty fortunate. A lot of people have gone before me, people who are a lot braver than I can ever be, at a time when, things were criminal offences and there was huge stigma in society. I think there probably still is a bit, but it's I think Ireland's a much more comfortable place for diversity now than it was in the past, and that's a good thing.
I mean, so there's so many texts and tweets, and I have to say, they're overwhelmingly, they look like they're 100% positive for you. I'll read some out later on. But in terms of history, I mean, apparently someone's just saying, you are the first government minister in the history of this state to be openly gay.
Yeah, I guess so. And that did cross my mind as well. is that, you know, that they're, the government only has another year to run. I don't know if I'm going to get re-elected. I don't know if the government's going to be re-elected. And I don't know, even if we are, whether the Taoiseach will ask me to serve again. And I think if I didn't do it, I would probably have regretted it for the rest of my life.
You have been spoken about as a possible future Taoiseach. Do you think Ireland is ready for an openly gay Taoiseach?
Yeah, I'm sure. I think Ireland probably is, but I don't think it'll be me, or I don't think it'll necessarily be me. It might be somebody who isn't even born yet. Like at the moment, I'm really just so busy with health and so focused on trying to turn that ship around that I just don't think about those things. I know people don't believe that. People are convinced that in politics, all we're all interested in is moving up the greasy pole. That isn't the case. Most of us are very busy, focused on our jobs, just trying to find enough hours in the day to deal with what's coming at us. So, you know, that's something for someone else in the future, you know.
Are you in a relationship at the moment?
No, not at the moment.
No. So that's not one of the reasons why you've done this?
No.
Would you like to be?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. Yeah. But like I say, I'll be keeping all that private.
Interestingly, what about your own leadership ambitions? Would you like to be leader? And obviously, how are relations with Simon Coveney? Because it's the two of you are often spoken about as future leaders.
Well, if you read the papers, Francis is in the mix too.
True.
I think both, either Francis or Simon, would both make really excellent leaders. And they've really proven themselves really well in cabinet in the last little while. We all know each other very well, actually. Francis is a family friend, actually. She's friends with my parents, and her husband's a psychiatrist. He's a doctor. So when I was a transition year student, I did part of my work experience in Francis Fitzgerald TD's office at the time. So we go back a long time. And Simon, I know very well, too. We're very, very like-minded. We don't see each other as much as we used to because, again, we're so busy. But look at one thing I think Fine Gael is fortunate to have is a lot of talent, and not just around the cabinet table, but a lot of young TDs coming up as well. Any of whom I think could offer the country leadership.
And yet, as you know, the polls indicate the electorate is really unhappy with the government you're part of. Is it difficult being part of an unpopular government, a very unpopular government?
Yeah, well, as you know, in the last set of polls, we're going in the right direction again. But being government isn't difficult. It's actually an enormous privilege because you get to do things that nobody else could possibly do. And I'm not here to do the party political, but, you know, the fact that we've got 80,000 people back to work. You know, the fact that we're balancing the books again and are able to cut taxes and put some money back in people's pockets, like all that makes it worthwhile. And even in my last job, you know, a lot of the time it doesn't really matter who the minister is, things would just happen anyway. But there were a few things, you know, whether it was, you know, deciding to link up the Lewis or the gathering or the sports campus, giving Shannon's independence. Those are the kind of things that really make politics worthwhile. Things that maybe wouldn't have happened had somebody else been in the hot seat.
People are very sick, they say, of the traditional parties. Did you ever think of going into Lucinda, your friend's new alliance?
No.
Did she ask you, by the way?
No, I haven't got the invitation yet. But I'm very happy in Fine Gael. It's been a party that's been very good to me and enormously accepting of me as well. I've had wonderful opportunities. You know, again, I'm not somebody who comes from a traditional background. I'm not somebody who comes from a political background at all. And yet this big, old, relatively conservative party was able to find space in it for me. So it's a very good home.
As you say, it is a big, traditional, but would be regarded as a conservative party. Do you worry that they will treat you differently now that you've said you're gay? Do you worry about that?
Everyone's an individual, so maybe some will. You know, Fine Gael is a broadly conservative party. We're not trying to turn the social order upside down or anything like that, and I don't think we should. I think a lot of what we have in Ireland is very good, and we should try and conserve that. But we're also a fairly progressive party too. You know, we are the party that brought in divorce, gave people a second chance at marriage, but not quickie divorces. And we were, I think, the first party to propose civil partnership that was under Sandra Shiel Terry, who represented Dublin West before me. So even though we are a Conservative party that doesn't want to revolutionise the country or turn the place upside down, we're a progressive party and a big tent, and there's lots of room for lots of different types of people.
Just to give a flavour of some of the reaction, because I need to take some because there's so much. Emma McMenemy goes, fair play to Leo for coming out of Mia McCallan's show, not an easy thing to have done. Well done, Leo. That's from Brian Walsh. Trish in the North Strand in Dublin, liking Minister Varadkar much more after this interview. Good luck to him. Another one, well done, Leo Varadkar. That took a lot of courage. Now keep doing a good job. Catherine says, well done to Mr. Varadkar. Would love to see him become Taoiseach when the time comes. Ethan Mullingar, I always like Leo, but I think I like him even more now. I could go on and on. I'll read one more because it's someone who works in your department. Good on the minister being honest with the public. Now, hopefully, people will stop the rumour and focus on the more important issue of being minister. By the way, I work in the Department of Health and did not know he is gay, and it doesn't matter one bit.
Yeah, that's all nice to hear.
No, it's interesting though, you were saying at the very beginning almost that maybe a lot of people would know. I don't think most people would have known you were gay, except in your own little circle and maybe a few in the media, actually.
Yeah, I think in the kind of, the sort of media political nexus, yes. Maybe more broadly, no. But again, I hope it doesn't make a difference.
And I'll give you one more. Let's go. I never knew Leo was gay. It's not a big deal, says John Deegan. Great really you could get to say this about his life and career and not just have to know him to broader general public. I feel a little better about this country. That's John Deegan, Quebec. And he goes, P.S. I don't like his politics, but I think he's one of the very few plain, straightforward politicians in this country.
Yeah, not sure the reaction online is going to be that favourable, but we'll see how it goes.
Did you sleep last night?
I did, yeah, absolutely.
Were you worried? Anxious?
A tiny bit, but not enormously, because I've been, thinking about this for a couple of months now and talking to friends and staff and family about it. So it's kind of nice to just have it done.
Interesting, my producer is just saying there's a lot of messages from parents of gay children who are thanking you for coming out this morning, actually. Yeah. Have you thought about that maybe coming out could help some younger people who are worried about coming out, worried about facing up to their own sexuality?
I think this is, it's very much a personal thing for people, and if people want to come out, they should. If they don't want to, then they shouldn't have to, and they shouldn't feel under any pressure to. The only time that I maybe felt a tiny bit of personal responsibility around it, and it's a funny story, because I was listening to Liveline, and I'd usually avoid listening to it. But it must have been the summertime or something, because I was at home in my apartment, and I had it on, had the radio on, and it was around the time, around Panty and Panty Bliss and
Rory O'Neill,
and all those issues, and the speech that he made, and there was kind of a woman rang into Liveline, and she said that her son had emigrated, that he'd gone to England because he didn't feel that he could succeed as a gay man in Ireland, and I just thought, that was so awful, because, I remember the government, and, there are plenty of people in senior positions in politics and business and all parts of the media, of course, and all parts of Irish life who are lesbian or gay or bisexual. And, I kind of almost wanted to ring her up or ring him up and just say, come back to Ireland. It's actually a good country.
But is that also a moment where even you would have thought, I really need to come out and tell people who don't know I'm gay? I mean, did you almost feel a responsibility to do that?
Yeah, to be honest, that really was the only time. Again, I think this is a very personal issue for any individual, and I don't think anyone should feel under any pressure or under any obligation to share their private life with anyone else. Like, nobody has to come out as heterosexual, so why should it be any different?
Is there any feeling, I mean, resentment's probably too strong a word on your part, that you're a public figure, but because you're a public figure, you felt you needed to come out and talk about your sexual orientation?
I wouldn't say resentment, but I suppose I'd like to get to the place, where the next generation of politicians don't have to do an interview like this, that it's just not a big deal. It's, blonde hair, black hair, whatever. It's not something you should necessarily have to, make a big deal of.
There's an election campaign coming up. When's it going to be, by the way?
April 2016 is the date.
Yeah, right. You said in the past, because I was looking at stuff on you, that you dread elections. How are you feeling about the next election?
Okay about it. It's, you know, I represent Dublin West, which would be a fairly left-wing constituency. It's not a strong seat for Fine Gael. In a bad election, we have no seat. In a good election, we have one. You know, I'm always a little bit worried about not holding on to the seat. As much for the people around me and the people who campaign for me and the members of the party as for myself. But, you know, it's coming, and all I can do now is work hard as a minister and work hard as a constituency TD and allow people to be the judge.
If you did lose your seat, I mean, do you ever think of that as a real possibility that you could lose your seat?
I do, yeah, and a lot of politicians do. Like in my constituency alone, both John Burton and Joe Higgins have lost their seat and done other things and then come back. So I have my exit strategy. I've two things I think about doing. One would be to do an MBA or to go back to college, maybe overseas. I never properly lived abroad. I'd like to do that, and then maybe go into something else. Go into maybe a management role or a business role. Or the other thing I'd really love to do, and I intend to do it at some stage, is to do something overseas. Using my medical and political skills, I did a short placement of voluntary service overseas, VSO, in Mongolia. And there's a guy now in my department who was working in Sierra Leone with MSF, and he's come to work in the department now. That's, you know, Doctors Without Borders, Medecins Sans Frontières. So I'd love to do something like that for a year or two. But as things stand, I definitely want to run for the Dáil again. I have to get selected by the local party in Dublin West first, and then elected by the people. And I'd love to serve another term. But even after another term, I'll be 41. And I don't see myself in politics, you know, at 51. I definitely want to do other things.
Would you, as well as maybe going abroad as VSO, would you return to medicine even full time if you were still living in Ireland? Or is politics so much in your blood that you'd find that less interesting, more boring?
No, I think I'd have to do something different again. You know, I've practiced as a doctor for 8 years. I'm in politics now for 10. So whatever I do next, I think it will be different. But I'd like it to combine. You know, what I've learned, which is, you know, sort of experience in politics and public administration and then also a medical background too. So, you know, one of the things that I found really interesting that I actually got to do in sport was I was on the board of the, you know, the World Anti-Doping Agency. And now I attend WHO meetings. So, I'm, you know, I'm sort of interested in all that space.
You're described as someone who's quite honest. You tend to shoot from the hip, people might say. That can get you into trouble sometimes for unguarded remarks. Are you ever worried that that could affect your career?
Not really. My general thinking on this is that politicians should trust people with the truth. And one of the reasons why I think people have a low opinion of politics is that very often we don't trust people with the truth. And actually, we now have a very educated electorate, and for better or for worse, we have quite a cynical electorate as well, who see through the rubbish in the way they didn't in the past, and the false promises and the platitudes. So, you know, I decided very early on that I would try to be honest and try to trust people with the truth, and I think that's definitely worked for me as a policy. I'm also a crap liar as well, so it's probably best not to try.
What about your social life? In that documentary before the election, it was interesting, you were saying that you were a bit of a loner, you spent time alone. Do you spend a lot of time on your own?
I now love the opportunity to spend time on my own. it very, very rarely happens now. I've good family, very good friends, and a really busy job. So I suppose what's different, that was, I think, probably 7 years ago now. What's different now is just being able to get a day to myself, and I still enjoy that. But I probably was more introverted in the past and in the last couple of years, particularly, again, the kind of job around tourism and sport where you're with people in big groups all the time. It's kind of helped me to become a better person and a little bit more outgoing.
Also, maybe because, as you said, you didn't really come out at all until quite late in your life. Would that be right? I mean, you know, you hear about some people when they're 16. Was that part of the reason you were a bit of a loner?
I was never a loner, you know. I wasn't, you know, sort of hiding away in the house or my apartment or anything like that. And like, sure, look, I was involved in politics, so I've been surrounded by people always. So if I describe myself as a loner, but that isn't what I meant. But definitely look at it like anyone. As you mature, as you get older, you become a slightly different person, and things that might have bothered you in the past just don't anymore.
Do you have good friends in cabinet? You often wonder what the alliances are like. I mean, would you regard any of your fellow cabinet members as friends? Would you ever socialise with them? Do you expect to get a call from them after this? Actually, Mary Mitchell O'Connor, not in the cabinet, of course, she just texted to say, happy birthday, Leo. I love you, sincere human interview. But in terms of your cabinet colleagues?
Yeah, like, I suppose again, because we're all so busy, we largely only see each other maybe once a week. And that's around an agenda. And the cabinet has changed. Half the ministers I started with 4 years ago are no longer ministers. So they do change over time. But there are people that I know, you know, going way back, you know, people like Simon, Francis, who's a family friend. I've got to know Paul Keogh very well. We kind of used to sit beside each other in cabinet, so it's a bit like school, you know, the person you end up sitting beside, you get to know. Charlie Fanning as well. So like certainly all the ones on the Fine Gael side I would know pretty well at this stage. I have kind of good friends of the Parliamentary Party too.
And as we come to the end of it now, as someone else has said, yeah, you are the first government minister in Irish history to speak about being gay. It can't have been easy for you. Do you feel like you've a weight lifted from your shoulders or not?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I've been, yeah, short answer is yes. But I suppose I just hope that next week people will treat me just the same. That's the only thing that I'd ask, really.
And actually, an awful lot of the texts from listeners are at pains to say they totally disagree with your politics. They cannot stand your politics, but they want to wish you well today.
That's nice. I hope some of the people who agree with my politics feel the same.
Yeah, for instance, there's a Paul Doran from Clondalkin. Hi, I'm a communist and the minister and I would disagree on almost everything. His coming out today is a breath of fresh air. I commend him for it and wish him well.
Yeah, I might get the Communist Party number twos. You never know.
Okay, well, look, Leo Varadkar, thank you very much for coming in today
and
being my guest. My thanks on sound today to Sheila Neave Wheel, to the broadcasting coordinator, Michael Lawless, to our researcher, Leslie Anderson, and producer, Alan Tourney. Thank you all very much for listening. I'll be here at the same time next Sunday. Until then, slán.